Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 45. What if your husband led a secret life?
We actually met on the first day of college. I went down with a friend that I just met to play tennis, and he was there playing tennis as well. So that was our very first meeting, first day of college. I think we had a lot in common. We were both from blue-collar families and loved to read and had a real strong interest in, I think, kind of the rural or the simple life, sort of. And I think I was just struck by his intelligence and he had a real sense of family, and that was struck me as really a good thing. The end of my junior year in college. Yeah, it was the end of my junior year in college, I got pregnant. Even though we were a couple of sorts, it just became apparent that he did not want to get married. And his family intervened and really didn't want him to get married. He had talked about going on to law school. And so I went up, I had an abortion. That was in the summer of 71. And then we got back together and decided to get married in December of 71, which we did on New Year's Eve. So I think the marriage started under sort of some rocky circumstances, but I think we were very much in love. People had said over the years that we were soulmates. We lived in a rural area adjoining the town. The town itself was about 25,000 people, a real classic New England town. And everybody really knew each other, and we both got jobs, teaching jobs immediately out of college. We were living in the community that he grew up in, and so we became really well established in that community and the school system. And he put law school aside and wound up teaching in the same high school that he had gone to. So he was very much, grew up in this town, and then went back and taught. And I was teaching in a elementary school. So that was the beginning of, we each had about a 32-year career in education. I don't think I can tell this story without giving the background that alcohol played in the story. And I think in the early years before we had kids, early 70s, we would go to parties, and it was before the DWI laws, and I can remember driving home sometimes when I shouldn't have. But alcohol was always there. I remember the very first Christmas that we were married, which would have been almost our first anniversary. He and his dad went off to visit some friends Christmas Eve, and he came home just absolutely drunk. And that was my memory of our first Christmas together. His dad is an alcoholic. He's been sober for several years. But there were many, many instances where if he were depressed or there was a crisis of some sort, there was always alcohol in the issue, in the mix. And then we were married for 9 years before we had children. I had developed an infertility problem. And so it was 9 years when we had our first child. I think it didn't really strike me as a problem until after we had children. I just always knew it was there, and I guess I just kind of accepted it as part of who he was and the culture. And I have to say that I think I was really so in love with him and so just thrilled that I was his wife. I just felt, this is this great man who is such a great reputation and so bright, and I was really enamored. But there were many instances where alcohol intervened and became a wedge. So I think it was in 95 when he had a conference with some colleagues somewhere, in Pittsburgh. And I knew what time the flight was coming in, and he didn't come home. And I remember calling one of his colleagues, and she saying, yeah, he was on the plane, but I guess had been drinking heavily. Anyway, eventually he came home, but was very, very drunk, and I just asked him to leave, and he went across the street. His parents lived across the street. So he went there and stayed, and I went to work the next morning. And then I got a phone call that he was in the hospital and had a breakdown of sorts, or so it seemed at the time. So he was in the psychiatric ward at the hospital and was treated for alcohol addiction, and at first wouldn't see me. In retrospect now, I know the basis, I believe, for the drinking, but I didn't. I had no idea at the time. And in retrospect, learned that during that conference, he had disappeared, didn't come back to his room that night, and had hooked up with a guy. And then things really kind of resumed a normalcy. And it wasn't really until 2006, when he retired, took early retirement from teaching, that everything fell apart. We had long discussions about whether he should take the early retirement or not, because teaching was such a part of him. But it was a good deal, and it was in the contract, and it may have been out of the contract, so it was a good thing to take it. But the drinking really escalated starting in 2006. Our daughter got married and had a baby in 2007. At one point, he went up to babysit and was online and didn't get offline correctly. And so when my daughter and her husband came home and they happened to be on their computer, they could see what sites he had been on and what he'd been doing. And so that was the beginning of his coming out of sorts. But my daughter never told me about that. It wasn't until 2010 that everything fell apart. But she knew all that time, and she and her husband wrestled with, you know, whether to tell me or not. He turned 60 in 2010, and he had gotten more work at the college, but there was still drinking. But in 2010, I gave a big 60th birthday party, and then the following weekend, which was right before Easter, on a Saturday evening, he never came home. The kids were coming down for Easter dinner, and I got a call from a friend, and he had passed out on this guy's lawn. He had been driving with an open bottle and passed out. So anyway, the guy brought him home, and he just went to bed for Easter Sunday. And I still had no idea of what was going on. And then a couple weeks later, he was beginning to disappear regularly. There was a second incident where he passed out on this guy's lawn, and the guy called me. He was a mutual friend. He called me and said, "I don't know if he's alive or not." They brought the ambulance, and they took him to the local hospital. They wouldn't admit him into the psychiatric floor because he was so intoxicated. So he wound up going home with another friend of ours, because I didn't want him home at our house. And then I ran into the guy whose lawn he had passed out on, and I said, I don't know. I don't know what is causing this." And I just had, all of a sudden, I had a feeling, and I said to the guy, "I wonder if this has anything to do with his sexual identity." And he just shook his head, yes. And I called my daughter, and that's when she, I met her for dinner, and she told me what they had learned. So I came home, and he was back at our house and asleep. And I came home, and he denied it, because I asked him if he had ever been with a guy. And he denied it, and this was 9 o'clock in the morning. So he said that he needed to go somewhere that day once I had said this, and he denied it. And I said, "Well, I will drive you somewhere," to a friend's house. And he brought booze with him, went to the friend's house to stay, and disappeared from the friend's house. The friend was a school psychologist, and when he came home, he wasn't there. And then eventually wound up back in the hospital and went to a pretty well-known alcohol drug rehab facility in Vermont. That was when he kept using the word powerless, that he was powerless, that he really couldn't talk to me about anything. I had arranged for us to work with a counselor when he got out. And so we went into the counseling, and I really didn't know what to expect. And that's when he told me for the first time that he had been involved with a 33-year-old man for 3.5 years who was married and whose wife was pregnant. And it was strange. My first reaction, and many people have told me this was weird, but my first reaction was how glad I was that it wasn't a woman. And I know that probably sounds strange, but it was almost as though that's something I can't compete with, you know. And of course, that changed over time, but that was my initial reaction. That was in June of 2010, and then came home to live, and we'd go back and forth to counseling. And I think we both wanted to save the marriage. But as I look back now, I think for him, the ideal would have been if it could have been an open arrangement where, because I know he loved me. I think he would have really, and he told me on occasion how much I would like this man, that he was a wonderful person. But during the course of all these sessions, there would be disappearances and the drinking would just escalate again. I never met the guy, and that was a huge part of the ending, because at one point I have a friend whose husband was a policeman, and I got the name of a private detective, and I talked to him, but I never did anything about it. Never hired him, never met him, never pursued it. But at one point when I was very angry with my ex-husband, I said to him that I knew who this person was, but never gave him details. But anyway, ultimately, after the breakup of the marriage, I learned that this man killed himself. I'm not sure if that's true, but supposedly he killed himself because his wife found out, because I sent a private detective to their home, which I never did because I didn't even know who it was. But that is what he has said happened. And so the man killed himself, which was my fault. At that point, the marriage ended on a very bad note, and I had a restraining order, and I had no contact with him at all. And I think even if I said I never did that, he wouldn't believe it. I'm not even sure the man committed suicide. I think it's more likely that the man dumped him. You know, he was old enough to be his father. As the years went on, I mean, I would say that in many ways, the marriage was really stable, and you know, were many good times. But the drinking, there would be periods where he would drink, and then he would. My daughter used to call it, he'd be in a funk. He would not talk for 2 or 3 days. And as I look back, you know, in times when he would get angry at me about things, you know, I think there had to be this feeling of, oh, I wish I were really who I am and could be out and not in this situation. There was a former student, a guy who he became really close friends with, and he would come down to our house often, and the three of us would play cards, but the two of them would just get absolutely blitzed. And so that friendship went on for, until we had children. And then it was severed, I guess. And eventually this guy died very young of a drug overdose. But now in hindsight, I look back and I'm sure there was a relationship there. I remember we took a trip to Hilton Head and we were taking the train. Actually, it was on our 25th wedding anniversary. And there was this young guy. They got together on the train and met, and he was looking for a job. He was from Idaho, looking for a job in the same field. And so he was invited to come to our town, and he actually stayed with us for a couple of weeks. And then my ex-husband found him an apartment in our town, and he did some subbing and then eventually left and went back to Idaho. But that's another instance of, as I look back now, I know. At the end of 2010, the drinking had really reached a point that he needed to be out of the house. And so he, on Craigslist, found a cabin. He would come back to the house during the day when I wasn't there, and then he would go back to the cabin at night. So I came home one day, and he was drunk, and he said that he was really sick, that something was really wrong, and would I take him to the hospital? And so they kept him in the hospital for a couple days, and then he asked me if he could come home for one night, the night he got out of the hospital, and then he'd go back to the cabin. So I said yes. He was going to spend the night, and just then the phone rang, and it was the roommate in the cabin. And I answered the phone, and I had met this man. I said, well, do you want to talk to my husband? And he said, no, I want to talk to you. He said, your husband is a wonderful man, he said, but he's very, very sick with alcoholism. And I'm going to Germany, and I can't let him stay in the cabin alone because there's a wood stove, and he was afraid he was going to burn it down. So could he stay with me? And I said, no. I said, but I'll put him on. And so he got on the phone and was mortified that, you know, this man was telling me. So anyway, he had just gotten out of the hospital that day, snowing, got his gear on, and left. I don't know where he went, just left. A couple days later, I was back at work, came home, and there was my doors were all locked, and there was a sign on the back door that said, go away, I'm staying here now. And all the doors were locked. And so there were snowbanks high, and I just thought, this is my home. So I was able to actually climb in a basement window, came upstairs, and he was there as drunk as could be, stood up in front of me and called me all sorts of foul names and spit at me. And I said to him, are you threatening me? And he said, yes. And so as soon as he said that, I went to grab the phone because I was going to call the police. And he grabbed the phone away from me, and both phones, my cell phone and the house phone, and bent my hand back and got the phones. And then he used some obscenities and said, what are you going to do now? And I said, I'm going to the police. And I did. And that was the end of the marriage. I went to the police, and he took off and stayed at some hotel, evidently in Massachusetts, but the police arrested him the next day. That was the last time we were ever in the house together. And then there was a very long, drawn-out, awful divorce. My son, who has some developmental delays and disabilities, has had a terrible time with this. And we had helped to buy him a house prior to the end of till all of this happened. And so when the divorce occurred, we had to sell that house. And he's living with his dad now. And just in the past 6 months or so, he comes and stays with me two or three nights a week. But he also has a severe alcohol problem. He started going to AA, but he just is living in this environment that's toxic. On occasion, I've gotten obscene phone calls, even though I had a civil restraining order. I've gotten obscene phone calls from his dad saying that he needed to come and live with me or he was going to kill him. Even after the divorce, I would get obscene emails and phone calls, and these would come to my office. So the past month or two, they escalated to the point of where I was afraid for my safety. One of them said that his main goal was to attend my funeral. So I went to the Women's Crisis Center and went before a judge, brought copies of all the emails so he can have no contact with me now at all. He was couching all of our contact because there had been a loophole in the initial restraining order that if it had to do with our son, I could be contacted. But he used it as a facade because the heading would say about our son, and then it was this vile diatribes about me. And his mother is certainly part of that. They blame me that I trapped him, that I purposely got pregnant, and therefore that set in motion. He married me out of guilt, and this prevented him from coming out and living his true life, although he has written to mutual friends and said, you know, what was I supposed to do, come out with in front of my redneck father, you know, and family? There was just no way he was going to come out in the 60s and 70s. I don't feel any blame. You know, these things happened 40 years ago. Everything is that I'm twice a murderer, that I, you know, had the abortion, and then am responsible for the death of this 3-year boyfriend of his. He thinks, first of all, that our son has the disabilities that he does because I had an abortion, and therefore, in his terms, I spawned this wonderful human being, but limited human being. I honestly believe that physiologically or whatever, that his brain cells have been somehow damaged by the quantity of alcohol. I believe that. And I also believe that he has still to this day not come to grips with his sexuality. And I've said to my son, I wish that Dad would just find a nice guy, you know, and get together and set up a home somewhere and go about his life. But he hasn't done that. And he would send these horrific emails to some friends, and he drew this line in the sand. Anybody who had anything to do with me anymore was persona non grata to him, including his own relatives. I mean, I go and stay with family in the South, his family, and he has cut them off completely. You know, I think one of the hardest things for me is that, you know, my son is still living there, but I know that he is perpetually being fed this venom by my ex-husband and by his mother. So if it weren't for that, I think I would just have this incredible feeling of freedom. Although I think always in the back of my mind will be, is he really going to go off the deep end someday and try to harm me? You know, and a restraining order is a piece of paper. The man that I loved is no more. It's almost like this person died, but is still living. I mean, in many ways, it was an abusive relationship, verbally, certainly, and emotionally, a lot. And so I've asked myself, you know, why did I tolerate that? And I think the answer was because there were so many wonderful times. But I think for me, the biggest sadness of it is the family has imploded. I mean, my son and daughter don't speak to each other, really. My daughter has had no relationship with her father. Her child has had no relationship with her father. I am relishing doing what I want to do when I want to do it and not worrying about how somebody else's reaction is going to, what it's going to be. I feel that I've survived this and I'm beginning to thrive. And most of the time I think of it as a new beginning. It's sort of like, you know, I have a chance here at a second life. And so there's a little bit of excitement about beginning again. But sometimes I get pulled back and I think, oh, you know, we had all these wonderful times and that's so sad. But then I also sometimes feel resentful that this was a lie, that I was living a lie.